In just a moment, we'll hear from Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Ben Fred Fridays is always brought to you by Blue Tail Medical Group and the doctors at Blue Tail, some of the nation's top experts in the fields of sports medicine and stem cell regenerative therapies. So if you're in line for surgery, before you do that, make sure you check out Doctors Bays, Crane, and Wolf, experts in stem cell regenerative therapy. Doctors from all over the world, they travel to Chesterfield Valley to learn how they're doing it. We're talking about your own body's stem cells redirected to concentrate all their power in the joints that cause you pain. To schedule an appointment, 636-778-2900, 636-778-2900, and see what they offer at BlueTailMedicalGroup.com. And as we always do, we say good morning on a Friday to Ben Fredrickson. It is a busy week in sports. How are we doing, Ben?
Doing well, Dan. Happy Friday to you and to all the listeners. And plenty to discuss. Some good, some bad, some really interesting. And another sports-packed weekend here.
I want to start with the really interesting. What's going on with the Rams? I know you kind of had a little peek behind the curtain with that and their situation with St. Louis and the lawsuit. What's happening there?
So some reports coming out, and I'll credit the Business Journal for being kind of on this first of what's going on with these depositions. You know, there's been reports of Tashara Jones being resisting a deposition of the CVC as well, and folks are wondering what's going on here. Well, there was a lengthy hearing on Thursday done virtually between all parties, and basically what's coming out of this is this: The Rams and the NFL are continuing to try to find ways to drag this conversation back to, you know, what we all know was a regrettable lease that the team had here in St. Louis at the Dome. And time and time again, the judge in this case, and he's been supported by the appeals court, has said this case, which is about how the NFL and the Rams violated the relocation guidelines before it moved to Los Angeles, it's not about what happened in 1995. It's not about the lease or the arbitration or the, you know, the St. Louis's decision to not make those tier one upgrades. This is about what happened when St. Louis tried to build a new stadium for the Rams, and the Rams were motivated that whole time to go to Los Angeles. And there just continues to be a difference of opinion on whether or not, you know, how far back that story should go. But the judge has made his opinion clear, and so has the appeals court. Yet the Rams continue to try to push that story back further, even to that one point admitting on Thursday that they really don't feel like they have much of a defense unless they can turn that dial back. So that's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out. Tashara Jones will be deposed. That's going to happen on Friday, at least it's scheduled to. And it sounds like that, you know, the folks from the CVC might as well, too, although what information becomes, you know, from that deposition actually gets brought up in court because of the limitations placed on the timeline by the judge will be very interesting to see how that plays out. Basically, it's a difference of opinion on when this story starts. Does it start in 1995, or does it start when St. Louis made an effort to build the Rams a riverfront stadium? And the two sides have very different opinions. The other interesting thing going on here, Dan, is that the St. Louis side is having a hell of a time getting Eric Grubman scheduled for a deposition. Multiple times one has been on the books, and multiple times it has now gone away. And it's a question of, is he going to have to be deposed, or is he going to have to be subpoenaed in order to be deposed? He's kind of in this gray zone where he's not technically an NFL employee anymore, but he's supposed to be kind of working on their behalf, so he wasn't subpoenaed to appear. But now it's a question of, should he need to be if they can't get him to sit down and do a deposition? So that's been frustrating on the St. Louis side of things, and a pretty blistering take from one of the St. Louis lawyers involved, Chris Bauman, who brought to the attention of the judge how many times some of these depositions have had to be rescheduled. Canceled at the last moment without a notice, without an excuse. Kroenke's was canceled. Dean Spanos's was canceled. Both of those had to be rescheduled. Now it's Grubman they're having a hard time getting pinned down. Every time that happens, it affects the schedule. You know, there's so many depositions planned here. There's a hard deadline. At least, you know, we'll see if the pandemic changes the timeline of things. But it's really cumbersome and difficult when all of a sudden there's a cancellation and all the schedules have to be moved around. So the Rams are playing delay tactics. I think it's safe to say that. and they're continuing to try to convince the judge in this case to maybe dial back that timeline a little bit deeper than what he initially said. We'll see if they have any luck with that. It sounds like it could be a pretty important part of their defense.
In terms of Kroenke, he has been deposed and he has done that, correct?
Yeah, well, he was scheduled earlier. It got canceled, but they have done it. Yeah, he was one of the two-day depositions along with Roger Goodell. Grubman is scheduled for 2 days as well. Some of the big ones have taken place. Some of the big names, some of the other big names, including some folks who were on the relocation committee, are still upcoming on the schedule. Now, the Rams and NFL's side of things said that both Spanos and Kroenke had to reschedule their depositions because they got COVID. That was what was said on Thursday in the hearing. So that's their side of the story, at least. But those have been done, yes.
Have you heard anything about those? Has anything come out that's leaked from those depositions?
I've not heard anything specifically about Kroenke's deposition. There is a protective order on the case, which, sometimes documents escape out from under that one way or the other.
Absolutely.
None of them have escaped out from under that into my possession.
Gotcha.
There was, to give full credit and to compliment them on the reporting, the Business Journal did have, I think, a document that they had been able to obtain that had talked about, Kroenke maybe trying to clarify some of the comments that he made that are, of course, are going to hang over his head in this case about wanting to do what was best for St. Louis, always working to keep football in St. Louis, paraphrasing that, of course. But, remember the comments that he made that, of course, stand out in bold now as making those as kind of trying to justify those as things that were said before the city decided not to upgrade the dome. So they're really trying to include that entire timeline as a willingness to show that they did operate in good faith. What the St. Louis side is saying is none of that's relevant. And this is a matter of what happened when St. Louis was told the Rams cannot just pick up and move to LA if you guys present a plan to keep them. And that was, of course, a lot of money went into that plan. There was a stadium, a sponsor willing to put its name on a stadium for that plan. So they I think, did a really good job of saying, let's not make this about what happened in 95 and all the fallout from it all the way up to through 2013. Let's make it about what happened when that plan was hatched to try to keep the team with a new stadium. And then that was made in vain because the team was already determined to move. So they're saying, not only are we not concerned about that past, we also included every other NFL team in the lawsuit. So by doing that, they're making it clear that this is not about 95 or the lease or the arbitration or the dome. This is about the league saying its relocation guidelines were X and then doing Y when St. Louis was attempting to build a new stadium to keep the team.
Understood. Let's switch to what's happening in sports and on the playing field, or in this case, the ice. The Blues continue to play, and they continue to play the same team, the Phoenix Coyotes. Not good for the league, not good for the fans, not good at all. I mean, you want to play. That part is good. It's just the continuation of playing the same teams because of COVID outbreaks with other teams. What's your, just your initial thoughts on seeing all these games against the same team?
It's kind of negative, but my gut reaction is kind of like, wake me up when this is over.
Yeah.
What are we learning here? Yeah, we know the Coyotes are good against the Blues. They've had their number for a while now. Craig Berube especially, his teams have struggled against the Coyotes. Are we getting any real information about the team out of this? I don't know. It's a playoff series in the middle of the season with no implications. Yeah, the division implications, but it's just not natural. And it's not natural to the guys. They're sick of seeing these guys. I think it's got to probably kind of feel like almost an exhibition at this point. It's not their fault. Yeah, at least these two teams are doing what they need to do in order to dodge the virus. But I have a hard time looking at it and thinking it's a really, really, up and up, legitimate contest here. It's just kind of goofy. And I got to imagine it feels pretty goofy to all of the guys who are going through this 7-game stretch, too.
They also, bottom line, they got to get better on special teams. They have been terrible this season, the Blues, on special teams.
Well, it's goofy because that was kind of supposed to be one of their strengths. I mean, with the guys they added, You know, it takes a while for chemistry to happen, and you want to give some patience there, but we're not talking about having all that much of a season left here. I mean, everything is shortened, right? So the pressure is starting to build. The Blues have been so good at 5-on-5, but you're right. At this point, it's not something that's ironing out the kinks. It's time to start moving some things around and trying to get some production there. Of course, it's one of those things too, where the longer it doesn't click, the more the pressure builds, which doesn't help anybody too. But at some point, you know, the idea of them being a killer power play team, I think that's probably out the window, but they should still be able to be a decent one. This just might be finding the right guys and the right mix of guys.
This time next week, Cardinals are on the field in Jupiter. This past week, they signed Yadier Molina. So, I felt he was coming back the whole time. I really did. And same with Waino. It was just going to take some time and be patient, as Mo said. And I believe that. The market had to kind of settle down and see where it was going to go and see if we had baseball this year, if it'd start on time. Now we know. Your initial thoughts to seeing Yadi come back and have at least one more year in St. Louis. And by the way, I'm not sold this is his final year either.
Yeah, I'm not either. But I did say, I mean, I went back and read something I wrote in, and I'm wrong a lot here, so this isn't like me puffing out my chest, but I said a while back, like, what the Cardinals need to do here is put Yadi on the Waino plan, where he plays 1 year, you reevaluate it after it's over, everybody knows you're not going anywhere, and you just do it year to year. And, you know, that's what they are on now, and I think they very well could turn it into another year. We'll see how this season plays out. I think he and Wainwright are both in the same place. If they're healthy and they feel good and they think the team has a chance to be good, they want to be a part of it. If something changes there where they don't play well or they don't feel good, I think both of them are to the point where they can walk away with their head held high. But why not have them back on a league, you know, very advantageous salary in terms of their performance for what they mean to the team, what they mean to the fans? It's the best for both parties. And I did think both would be back. I thought that was just a matter of time. I wasn't sure what else the Cardinals would do. Other than that, I thought they would find a way to upgrade the lineup. Well, they certainly have done that, and then some, by adding Nolan Arenado, who's one of the best players, which made it that much easier for Yadier Molina to jump back in. He's wanted to play with this guy for a really long time. So I think this is, you know, it's good for all the reasons that are obvious. You know, the fact that people like Waino and Yadi, it's another season of them together, you know, that their story gets another chapter. But it's also really interesting to me because I think they feel like this team can be good. And I think what trading for Arenado did was it kind of bridged the gap. The Cardinals were a team that was kind of wanted to have a foot in both camps, right? It wanted to trust the young guys and turn some playing time over, but it also wanted to bring back these two wily veterans and send them out right. But they had a real gap in kind of the middle. It was like Paul Goldschmidt hanging out by himself in the middle in terms of the now. Well, now they've got a great player in Nolan Arenado. Now they can be a good team, a top 6 to 10 team being fueled by both prospects and veteran guys with some real heft in the middle. And I think it really kind of the series of moves made them a team that isn't trying to figure out if it's going forward or waiting until next year. It gives them a purpose. And what their purpose has been for years and years is to be good now and later. And I think now they are that team. Now, can they get better? Sure. Are they good enough to win it all? Not necessarily, but they're a good enough team to be a top 6 to 10 team. And a top 6 to 10 team can, I think, you know, have a chance to win it all. The Cardinals last year, you know, the big thing was if you're good enough, you get into the postseason, maybe you catch a break, you go all the way. Let's not forget the Cardinals did catch a break last year. The Padres pitching staff was roasted with injuries, and the Cardinals couldn't take advantage of it. They got crushed in a bullpen game. So now they're better than that. The Padres, of course, have gotten better, so have the Dodgers. But the Cardinals, I think, can head into the postseason now with a little more proof that they're the kind of team that can stick around a while.
I'm interested into how many starts Yadi will get this year. I'm thinking if he's healthy.
How long's the season?
Yeah, if we got 162 games and he's healthy for all of them, I'm penciling him in for 125 at least.
Yeah, I would too. I don't think he came back to sit. He did say the right things in his Zoom call where he's, you know, says he wants to help that next generation, whether it's Kisner or Herrera. But look, if the Cardinals are planning some sort of massive timeshare, Dan, you've said this isn't news to anybody. They would have played Kisner more last year. You know, I think Andrew Kisner started 4 games last season. I know it was a 60-game season, but
right,
that was still 3 times fewer games than one-legged Matt Wieters started. I mean, Matt Wieters wasn't good last year. No disrespect to him, but Kisner still didn't play. And Mo said this offseason that if Yachty didn't come back, they'd probably have to make a move to add a catcher, which didn't necessarily put a lot of confidence in Kisner's ability to be the everyday guy. It would be great for him to get some reps, and I don't think Yachty will start every day. Maybe he's a little more open to taking a game a week off, but I think if Yachty or Molina's back in a Cardinals uniform, then I'm going to expect to see him out there a whole lot more often than not.
It was good a couple of nights ago to watch Slew. That finally, in that second half, end of the first half, that looked like the Slew that was the team before the shutdown. They look pretty good.
Yeah, they're kind of starting to get their legs back, I think, and good to see Jordan Goodwin playing like Jordan Goodwin again. He had been a little slow to launch after the COVID pause. We still don't know which guys had it, which guys didn't specifically, although probably better off trying to figure out which guys didn't.
Yeah,
because so many
no
of
kidding.
Them did. But they're starting to look like themselves again, and that's really good. You know, you got to beat the bad teams in the league. Showed an ability to do that. They need to do it again. And, you know, kind of, I think, put up a body of work that if you're the NCAA selection committee and it's time to talk about those at-large bids, you're looking at the net, you're looking at all these things. But this year, too, they should at least be looking at COVID. And the fact that the Billikens got nearly wiped out with, you know, lost a month of their games, had to shut down for a month, and the fact that they came back and lost two games and then got back on a winning track, if that continues, that's a pretty easy decision for me to make if I'm on the selection committee. I see a team that had double-digit number of caseloads of COVID that was playing great before the shutdown and took two games to get its wind back and then went on another run. I feel good about that team. So they need to keep kind of having that be their storyline.
And Mizzou, not good in the state of Mississippi, my man, but they got Arkansas coming up this weekend. It's been a fun year, I think, for Missouri basketball and for Konzo Martin. He's had a solid year, but man, sometimes there's just some clunkers and you just scratch your head, don't you?
Well, I'll tell you what, I don't know what it is about the Magnolia State, but Missouri needs to get the hell out of there and stay out of there.
No doubt.
And this goes back to, I mean, remember the football team lost to Mississippi State to kind of put a dent in its nice season there under Eli Drinkwitz. Missouri lost had that terrible second half at Mississippi State after what might have been the best first half of their season. That was a bad loss for a team that's got some really nice wins. And then this snoozer at Ole Miss. Tell you what, Kermit Davis, he's got Konzo figured out. He's now, I think, 6-2 against Zoe, dating back to their first meeting, which was a game between Missouri State and Middle Tennessee. And he's just kind of got his teams fired up to play against Konzo's teams. He kind of seems to have, you know, some coaches just have more luck against other coaches. They kind of got them red, and it kind of seems like that's the case with Kermit. The other thing is, for whatever reason, Missouri just doesn't play well in Oxford and just hasn't for a long time. And that was a trap game, and man, Missouri cannonballed into it.
No doubt.
Looked like they didn't want to be there. They looked flat, especially in the second half. Any time where you've got Jeremiah Tillman taking four field goal attempts, it can't happen. They got out-rebounded by a lot. It was their worst point margin loss of the season. And Konzo pretty much said it. I mean, he didn't sugarcoat it. He said some guys didn't show up. He's putting a lot of not blame, but a lot of challenge on Xavier Pinson to play better. I mean, when he doesn't attack, their offense doesn't get going. The good news for the Tigers, they haven't lost back-to-back games all season. They're going to play their Rally for Ryan game at home against Arkansas on Saturday. They have not lost any of those games. And usually when they're coming off a big loss, they play better. Pinson, when he's coming off a bad performance, tends to play better. So I think they will bounce back. But, yeah, you're right. It's hard to explain that one away. There's really no answer for it.
This weekend on Fox Channel 2, to honor the Negro Leagues, we'll have Bob Kendrick, the director of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. I think fans will really enjoy that, the connection of Lou Brock to the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. Bob Kendrick will be my guest. Up on the website right now, you can listen to a visit I had yesterday with Hall of Famer Ted Simmons, and I think people will enjoy that as well, and Brian Walton on Wednesday, and so on and so forth. And as always, we love visiting with Ben Fredrickson on these Fridays. Ben, have a safe weekend, and where are you going this weekend? Are you going to cover the Mizzou game, or what are you doing?
I'm actually going to be around here. So I've got a couple colleagues at Mizzou for the Mizzou game, so I'll be here kind of saving up my cold weather time before I hopefully get down to Jupiter. I think I'll be going down to spring training for the final three, 4 weeks here. I'm just hoping it's still up and running by the time I'm supposed to go.
Boy, we'll see. Fingers crossed, my man. Isn't that the truth?
Hey, I wanted to tell you that was a great get with Bob, too. And I got to encourage folks. One of my favorite things to do growing up, I used to spend some time every year with my aunt who lives in Kansas City, and she would take me to the Negro Leagues Museum. So for people who have not been, next time they're in KC, they got to find a way to go. If you're in Missouri within driving distance and you haven't been to the Negro Leagues Museum, you're doing yourself a disservice, especially if you're a baseball fan.
Yeah, it's about baseball, but man, it's really about our country, which is the neatest part about it, and a teaching lesson for so many people. And that's wonderful to hear. Bob has great stories about Hank Aaron, and you'll see in the show on Sunday, I have a picture that Bob has, and I said to Bob this week, I said, Bob, that's, I think, my favorite picture I've ever seen of Henry Aaron. And it's Henry Aaron at the age of 17. You ought to see this, Ben, and I have it in the show. He is so skinny, innocent looking, and scared as hell. And that's the way that Bob put it. He said he has no idea what's about to hit him, and he's outside a bus station in Mobile, Alabama, getting ready to get picked up to go to the Indianapolis Clowns. It's an unbelievable photo. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, we had no idea what was about to hit us.
Yeah, no kidding. It's pretty neat. So I think people people will enjoy the show. As always, thanks, my man. We'll catch you up next Friday.
Okay, sounds good, brother. Talk to you soon.